A week after the attack in San Bernardino, California, questions about the U.S. response on Capitol Hill.
At a Senate Armed Services Committee hearing today, Secretary of Defense Ash Carter said the U.S. is intensifying its military campaign against ISIS, but he also rejected the call for a U.S.-led ground invasion, saying that might encourage ISIS. Republican Senator John McCain took issue with that.
Does anybody really believe that if the United States struck back against the people that just slaughtered some Americans in San Bernardino, that somehow that would encourage them? What encourages them, Mr. Secretary, is success.
Well, as that debate continues, we're learning more today about the shooters in the San Bernardino attack. The head of the FBI saying that Syed Farouk and his wife Tashfeen Malik were radicalized at least 2 years ago before they started dating. The attack has put some focus on the role of women in terrorist groups, and we want to talk about that now with Karima Banoon, who is a professor at the University of California, Davis School of Law. She joins us from Istanbul, Turkey, via Skype. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So do we have a sense of how many women there are around the world fighting with ISIS or who are inspired by ISIS?
So there are said to be about 600 Western women who have been recruited by ISIS, but the reports are that there are many more non-Western women, including, for example, about 700 women just from the country of Tunisia who have gone to Syria to join jihadist groups.
And do they take on the same roles as men who are fighting with ISIS?
No, there is a very strict gender segregation in the roles of those who are recruited. Women are meant to serve as jihadi brides and ideally jihadi widows to those fighters who are fallen. And they are also meant to produce the new generation of jihadists, the new babies, the new children, to people of the so-called Islamic State. And they also are, to some degree, as professionals, meant to provide services to women, gender-segregated services in roles like doctors and teachers.
So reproduction is actually something that is a key concern of the leaders of ISIS. They want to make sure that they're here for generations and generations?
Well, absolutely. I mean, their project, unlike other jihadist groups in the past, their project is very specifically one of state building, and you need to people that state.
But in the case of Tashfeen Malik, she, it seems, was just as crucial to the mission as her husband.
Absolutely. And I think that that has to do with the reports that we're hearing that she did not have contact with ISIS, in fact, before the attack. She, in fact, was acting in violation of the ban that ISIS has had so far on women serving in the capacity of fighters. One can hope that that is not going to become a new kind of ISIS practice going forward.
What kind of promises have to be made to recruit women to fight with ISIS, to come to Syria or to come to other places and learn what they need to learn and then fight with ISIS?
Well, ISIS has been using very sophisticated propaganda, targeting women. And in fact, that's another role in which women have served the so-called Islamic State, which is by being propagandists on Twitter, reaching out to young women, Muslim women, converts in other places, using very gender-specific propaganda to lure them to the so-called honor of being jihadi brides, calling themselves muhajirat or female migrants. And one of the criticisms has been that, in fact, not enough of the counter-radicalization narrative has been gender-specific so as to counter ISIS's women-focused propaganda.
There are some people who look at women joining these groups and see what they're doing, the role that they're playing, as basically sex slaves to the men.
Well, that is one way of looking at it, and indeed it fits in with the justification of sexual slavery that ISIS has issued in the past, and that is a practice that they have used mainly with minority women that they have abducted. But ultimately, those women recruited by them end up serving in a similar capacity, though they have, to some degree, volunteered for it, perhaps, especially given how young some of these girls are who are going, not really understanding what they were getting themselves into.
Still, are you surprised at how many women there are who have decided to go for this idea?
It is very worrying, and it shows a complete ignorance on the part of these women and girls of what Islamic State actually is doing to women on the ground, and the large numbers of Muslim women and women of Muslim heritage in these frontline countries who are at the forefront of opposing these groups. We really have to think about counter-radicalization, both in terms of preventing the recruitment of women and of men.
But in terms of women, how do you counter-radicalize? What is the successful way to stop these women and girls from going and joining ISIS?
Well, I think one of the things that we have to do is, again, have a more gender-specific counter-narrative. We have to involve more and more women and women's voices in programs designed to counter violent extremism. There has been a dearth of women who have been invited to join in those processes. That absolutely has to change. And we have to tell the stories of women on the ground, of women like the Iraqi lawyer Samira An-Naimi, who was killed by ISIS for protesting their destruction of historical sites in Mosul. We have to tell those stories so that it is clear what Islamic State is doing to Muslim women.
That's Karima Benoun, who is a professor at the University of California Davis School of Law. She's joining us from Istanbul, Turkey. Her book is called Your Fatwa Does Not Apply Here, Untold Stories from the Fight Against Muslim Fundamentalism. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.